Hello, hello, and welcome to part two of our special episode of Power Up and Game. I'm your host, Michael, and joining me, as always, is my main man, Taylor. Taylor, how you doing, buddy?
Man, I am doing pretty good, aside from some audacity issues. Luckily, we only lost about 5 minutes, so we were able to just restart recording, and hopefully it doesn't do it again. But I'm very excited to get into our episode here today. I had a lot of fun with part one, and I cannot wait to get into our top 10 favorite games of all time.
Yeah, we had a good time last week when we recorded this, to the point to where we went from, we decided to do a two-parter, and there's my pup. Gosh darn it. Anyway, so yeah, let's go ahead and get this intro out the way so I go get my puppy. Taylor, before we get to our top 10, how are you feeling about Overwatch? Because we have I have a bit of a love-hate relationship going on when it comes to Overwatch.
So, Michael was dating this podcast a bit, but I understand why, because Blizzard is doing everything in its power currently to kill the Overwatch franchise. I'm not feeling very great about the Overwatch franchise right now. I am very glad that we're doing this two-parter, because our options today was to either talk about our top 10 favorite games of all time, or talk about how Overwatch 2 is dying a horrible death. So I know which one I'd rather talk about. But before we get into our top 10 games, favorite games of all time, I want to recap where we were, where we left off. And if you have not seen part 1, highly recommend checking it out. It was a fun time. I genuinely thought it was a great episode from us. But I'm just give out a recap real quick to get us all up to speed. So Michael's list so far, top 20 favorite games of all time. 20, Resident Evil 4. 19, Brothers in Arms. 18, Naruto, Rise of a Ninja. Number 17, Advent Rising. Number 16, Remember Me. 15, Project Gotham Racing. 14, John Woo Presents Stranglehold. Number 13, Sudeki. Number 12, God of War 3. And number 11, Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare. About your list, I really enjoyed hearing Stranglehold on your list. That was a game that we talked about in part 1, that even its demo was just insanely fun. And hearing you talk about God of War 3 in such detail, why you loved it, and also the OG Call of Duty 4 and what it did for the first-person shooter genre. Those three games in particular. Yeah, it was quite
literally a game changer.
Yeah, it was quite literally a game changer. Mm-hmm. As for my list so far, I had number 20, Mass Effect 3. Number 19, Portal 2. Number 18, Batman Arkham Knight. Number 17, God of War 2018. Number 16, Resident Evil 2 / the Resident Evil 2 Remake. I kind of cheated there. Number 15, Left 4 Dead. Number 14, Marvel's Guardians of the Galaxy. Number 13, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, the OG. 12, NFL Street 2. And number 11, The Last of Us. The Last of Us barely missed out on my top 10. And mostly that's because of nostalgia, I would say. Just kicking in. If this was a best list, it would probably be near the top 5. But considering this is favorite, I just can't do it. It's also just way too dark of a game for me to... I like dark movies and television shows and all that, but even like video games too. But when we're talking like favorite, you know, maybe I might lean more towards some nostalgia and fun. But that's just me. Overall, though, I really liked our list here. Mine, I felt like, was probably more controversial, considering I had Mass Effect 3 and Arkham Knight there, but I stand by my reasonings for it. And also Guardians of the Galaxy. I stand by that pick wholeheartedly with its story.
I also approve that pick.
Yeah. So I think we had some good picks going into our top 10, and I'm excited to see what our top 10 looks like. Michael, do you want to kick us off with your 10 through 7, or do you want me to?
Yeah, I'll go ahead and take it over. Right. I mean, we did it last time, so might as well keep up with traditions. Can we call it traditions? What we call that? Let's call it a tradition.
We're going to anyways.
Yeah. So for me, at number 10 is a little game called Condemned Criminal Origins. I know it was one of those games that was underrated, in my opinion. It came out back on the PS 360 days. It came out on the Xbox 360 and PC. It was one of those games that it changed the way I looked at games, because I am not a horror game player. I do not really play horror games. I know I had Resident Evil. I know I've talked about that. I approved Resident Evil 4, and you and I loved the games up until the Forbidden number 6. But I am a little bitch when it comes to horrors. I am not that good when it comes to them, and I will openly admit that. I've never been ashamed to admit it. But Criminal Origins was just something special for me, and it was because you got to play as a detective trying to solve a set of murders. And I'm a sucker for mystery games. I like a good mystery game. So I overlooked the whole horror aspect because the game was more melee focused. Like, yeah, you walked around and you searched for clues, but whenever you were attacked, it was more of, hey, use your surrounding area, you know, rip off that door, that locker door, and smack somebody with it, or pick up a brick and just yeet it at somebody's face. And I was like, yo, that's fun. I like that. So for me, Criminal Origins was great. They did a sequel. I'm glad they were able to get a sequel. And I think they improved on some of the aspects that people might not have liked in the first one. But I still love the first one the most. It was just something special to me. And the second one, cool follow-up, but not as cool as the first somehow. And for number 9, now, Taylor, I don't know if you knew a little something about me, but I do have a love for arcade racing games. One of those arcade racing games that I really loved
is Rocket League.
Oh, goodness, no. I am not a Rocket League player. I'm so bad at that.
You know
game.
What? That's fair, because I have noticed, like, people, I'm going to kind of bury you here, but people who are not great at Rocket League tend to be like, no, it's not for me. Never putting it on any list whatsoever in terms of best or favorite. So, completely get it. But that's honestly where I thought you were going.
Oh, no, I'm so bad at that game. Like, it's fun. Don't get me wrong, it's fun. But I'm just so bad at it. It reminded me of the time I tried to play Team Fortress 2 for the first time. Ooh-wee! Man, I got shitted it on. And I was like, you know what? This isn't for me.
Careful, Michael. That'll get you banned from Overwatch, too. I'm sorry. I dated this podcast further.
Overwatch, yes. But Team Fortress 2, I highly doubt that, because Valve actually somewhat cares about this player base. But getting back to my number 9, I have picked Need for Speed Underground.
God, I wish it was a Blizzard game. That would have been so funny.
That would have been so gross.
Need for Speed Underground's awesome, though. I'm just gonna let you go off, but it was a good bit.
Oh, yeah, it's back when EA actually cared about the franchise, and EA actually tried to make some cool stuff. The customization in that game was just ridiculous. It was just so fun to just race around the open city, somewhat open city, and just, I don't know, have fun. It was one of those games that you could just drive around and have fun, and you didn't have to do all the racing. You just wanted to collect everything. And there's not a whole lot of racing games out there, in my opinion, that I found to be worth it, you know? For me, I don't really care for racing games in general, because it really is that big focus on, oh, you got to be the best, you got to race this, that, blah, blah, blah. It felt like busy work. But for Need for Speed Underground, I wanted to do the busy work, because getting all the upgrades and the different decals and upgrading my car and making it look like my car was fun. And, you know, you don't get that much anymore, because I think the last Need for Speed game, they tried to introduce like cards to where you got a trading card for your engine block, got a trading card for your NOS boost. It was stupid stuff.
EA is a lot like Ubisoft in the way that
they dropped the ball.
Not only did they drop the ball, but a lot of their games feel so uniform.
Oh,
so whenever the whole card craze happened, like the Ultimate Team and loot boxes, EA jumped on it, and you could tell in all their games, like they loved the unlock a pack with cards, and here's what you get with it.
Yeah, it was absolutely horrible, and it ruined the franchise, in my opinion. I know some people try to like it, but yeah, Need for Speed Underground. Just do a remake, EA. Please, just give us a remake of Underground, and I guarantee you have people hungry for new Need for Speed games again. And at number seven, at number eight. Now, Taylor, how many times have you heard someone say that somebody's going to release a Halo Killer back in the day?
Oof. It was Halo Killer, then it became a Destiny Killer.
Yeah.
Was it Call of Duty Killer, I guess, is what it would be now?
Now everybody's trying to do a Call of Duty Killer.
Yeah.
Yeah, back in the day, it was Halo. That was the thing everyone wanted to do. You know, it wasn't the next Doom or the next Quake. It was the next Halo. Who's going to be the next Halo?
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this.
Sony tried that with one of the studios called Guerrilla Games, and they made a big hype about it. It was a little something called Killzone.
Fuck yeah, Michael. This is not in my top 10, but I'm so glad that you have it here, because this is such a controversial pick in the best way. Because you're doubling down on your Killzone love by going, you know what? It's not just in my top 20 favorite games of all time. It's number fucking 8.
Yeah, it's in my top 10.
It's in your top 10. Fuck yeah, man. Yeah. Stick with it.
Yeah, so just so everybody know, I'm talking about Killzone 2. I want to talk about Killzone as the franchise itself, but we did have certain rules that we weren't going to do full franchises. But Killzone 1 was terrible. And, you know, it wasn't even Guerrilla Games' fault. It's because the media themselves and gamers themselves took it as, oh, man, this is going to be the Halo Killer. This is Sony's Halo Killer. This is PlayStation's Halo Killer. So Guerrilla Games got the short end of the stick. Because they're like, yeah, we're not trying to make a Halo Killer. We just want to make a cool first-person shooter. And it didn't work out that way. And the first game was terrible. I had it. It was back on the PlayStation 2. Did not like it because I was like, yo, I love Halo. And my little brother, he had a PlayStation 2. I had an Xbox. And we both liked Halo. And we're like, yeah, bro, Halo on PlayStation, let's go. It was terrible. And then the PlayStation 3 rolls around, and they showed off this, as we know it now, pre-rendered CGI nonsense of Killzone 2. It looked awesome. Don't get us wrong. But man, back then, bullshots were the thing. Ubisoft was king of it, but yeah, bullshots were a thing. And it was always, oh, this is what we're targeting back in the day, but I digress. Killzone 2, when it released, easily the best first-person shooter on PlayStation. I will stick that to this very day. Killzone is still Sony's first-person shooter to me. They tried doing it with Insomniac and their, what was the name of that franchise? The Alien game where they were, the Human Extinction. I'm going to kick myself in the butt for not remembering it, but honestly, it was Insomniac Games' most forgettable game, in my opinion. But Killzone 2 took everything from the first game, scrapped it, built itself from the ground up, had a far better story, cooler characters, the Hellghast. Oh my goodness, they were actually scary in this game. You wanted to get rid of them. You wanted to kill them. It was absolutely brilliant. And instead of being on a planet like Earth, we got to take the fight to the Hellghast by going to their planet of Helgon. And it was absolutely a brutal game. And by the end of it, even though they dropped the ball at the ending, I wanted to see Killzone 3. And man, while we didn't get Killzone 3, we did get Liberations. And you know what? I want Killzone back. If there's any franchise other than Ratchet and Clank that I want PlayStation to bring back, it's Killzone. And it's because the game, the gunplay was solid. The character designs are awesome. The Hellgeists are just evil looking and just fun to kill. The level designs were fun. And especially with Liberations, they got a PSP game. I mean, they got a PlayStation 3 game to run on a PSP and PS Vita. Yo, that is absolutely astounding. And I really hate that Guerrilla Games is sticking with Aloy and not going back to Hellgun, because, man, I want a new Killzone.
Was the other game you were talking about Infamous Second Son?
No, not Infamous. Okay. I'll have to look it up while you're doing your list. But
well, let's round us out with number 7 then.
Yes, at number 7. All right, Taylor, I know you said that we're going to have some controversial picks, but I have talked about this game in the past, and I think I even tried to get you to take a look at it. It's a little game called Star Wars Republic Commando. Now, you want to talk about a good first-person shooter that kind of changed things up? Oh, man. Republic Commando was awesome. Last week, I talked about Brothers in Arms, and one of the things that I really loved about Brothers in Arms was that you did get to take command, and instead of just being like Call of Duty where you just follow the NPC and shoot things, it was you led the NPC, you gave out orders. And Republic Commando, they did the same thing, to where you took the lead of the Republic Commandos. Republic Commandos of Stormtroopers, of I think they were clone troopers, and you actually gave out orders. It was, hey, follow me, stand here. I need fire on this enemy. Yo, I'm getting sick of getting hit by this flying enemy. AI, take care of that because my aim is bad. And the AI is actually pretty good in this game. Like, they weren't getting stuck on walls or getting trapped behind a weirdly placed box or anything. They did a good job sticking near you, and they did a great job taking command. They were pretty good shots. Like, yeah, they didn't hit everything, but, man, there were some pretty good shots. So, like, oh, yeah, you guys really are best of the best when it comes to these clone troopers. And I've always wanted a Republic Commando 2. Unfortunately, we never got that. So, Disney, you know, you guys own the rights. Find somebody, not EA, not Ubisoft. Find someone who loves Star Wars and allow them to either do a remake of Republic Commando or to do a spiritual sequel to Republic Commando, because I want more of the Stormtrooper, I mean the Clone Troopers arc, to where I get to give out commands and take control and not just be a Jedi. I can actually be just a regular soldier. And guess what? It's really fun. So if you are one of those people, it came back on the original Xbox and PlayStation 2. If you're one of those people who love to collect games, I recommend Star Wars Republic Commando. Find it. You won't regret it. It is so much fun.
So what I love about your list so far is how honestly weird it is. Because you got two first-person shooters here. Republic Commando. Killzone 2. But you have Killzone 2 here.
Yeah, which, Condemned is also a first-person.
Yeah, but that's a melee horror game, so... You got a melee horror game, you got a racing game, and you got two first-person shooters, one of which is Star Wars, and did not blow up like Battlefront did. And the other is Sony's attempt at a Call of Duty Halo-esque game that never really took off the way Sony wanted it to. And out of all the games so far on your list, Killzone 2 is the one that, while I'm not the biggest fan of it, mainly because I think I've played it like once, I really respect that pick. Because I bet there's a lot of people like you that's like, you know what, Killzone got a bad rap. Let's have another shot at it. Like, this is a franchise that I think should get another shot. Especially in today's
age. I wish.
Like, you can have a lot of fun with that.
Oh, man, that's one thing I forgot to bring up. Killzone's multiplayer was absolutely brilliant. It did not feel like Halo at all. It felt like its own thing, and I'm glad it did, because, man, like I was saying, those weapons were just brutal. And in the game, it felt so balanced. I was like, man, this is the reason why I would have PlayStation, the online PlayStation 2 function, but thankfully it was on PlayStation 3. And Taylor, I'm telling you, man, if it came out today, Sony would probably screw it up by having like free battle passes and crap in there. But the solid gameplay and the multiplayer alone is worth picking up.
I believe you, man.
Also, Taylor, the game I couldn't remember, it was Insomniac's Resistance, Fall of Man.
I don't really remember that game all too well, to be honest with you.
Yeah, it rings a bell.
I'm like, I know what you're talking about, but I have no idea. Yeah. I was thinking of Red Faction for some reason.
Red Faction, that's a great game. But yeah, unfortunately, Resistance is honestly Insomniac's like most forgettable game. They were really trying to do something different, which I respect them for doing that, but it lacked their creativity, and it was like this dark alien invasion kind of game. It's like, yeah, it's cool that Insomniac is doing something different, especially since they spent the whole time doing Ratchet and Clank. But man, Resistance just wasn't there. I guess it just I don't know. But it got three games. They made it a trilogy, so you know it has a following, I suppose.
Well, you know what doesn't have a following as much as it probably should, considering how good the game is? My number 10, which is a nostalgic pick, and need to make this again perfectly clear. This is not a top 20 best games of all time. This is our favorite, and we're putting quality into our judgment of all our picks here, because I just want to reiterate, I think Last of Us would be easily in my top 10, in terms of, especially just because of the story. But number 10, what barely beat The Last of Us to make my top 10 favorite, Star Fox 64.
Oh, wow.
Like this, the nostalgicness of it getting out of the way, this is the first game I ever beat.
Oh.
As a little kid. And man, it was difficult. It was really difficult because the game does not really hold your hand with things, and there's multiple paths to take. There is multiple ways, if I'm remembering correctly, there's like multiple endings, and to get the best ending, to get the best paths, it's difficult. That's all I'm gonna say. You have to really know the levels inside and out, and I probably would not know the maps today if I had to play through the game, but man, my little kid brain, he knew all of it. All the steps to take to get the best ending, to save everybody's lives, get the best villain at the end, all the paths. It was just, it's a great game, man. It is a phenomenal air combat game. That's another thing that makes it so different. It's air combat only. Besides that one mission where you're a tank on the ground, but which, by the way, that mission fucking sucks. I stand by that. But this game's great. It's got a very arcadey, stupid, fun story. It's got fantastic combat. It's got fun characters other than Slippy. And it's got great boss battles, too.
Poor Slippy.
As for my number 9, don't worry, Naughty Dog. Although you did not get in my top 10 with The Last of Us, you did get into the top 10 with Uncharted. More specifically, Uncharted 4, A Thief's End. This was my introduction to the Uncharted franchise. Which is funny, considering it's the end of the Uncharted franchise.
Yeah.
It's just everything you would want out of this Indiana Jones, Tomb Raider-esque franchise that has spawned to become its own thing. And now, even like from the introduction, this being my introduction to the franchise, like seeing the story unfold and being that story of Nathan Drake getting pulled back into that life and learning to let go and just move on and, for the lack of a better way to put it, grow up. It was still really good. Now that I had the context of the other games in the franchise and going back to it, it's even better. And then we get to the ending. I'm not going to spoil the ending of Uncharted 4, but it's one of the most, like, as a fan, satisfying endings in all of games for me.
It's just definitely a tease.
It's perfect. That's all it is. It's just a perfect ending. It is a great story to end Nathan Drake's journey in my opinion. I don't need another Uncharted. I really don't. I am perfectly happy with what we got here. I know that there's the whole rumor mill about like, oh yeah, they're going to do another Uncharted. Fine, sure. Do another one. Doesn't have to be Nathan Drake. His story's complete to me. It is told to perfection in Uncharted 4 at Thieves' End.
Which they showed they were willing to do, because they have done another Uncharted game,
which I thought was pretty well received. I didn't play that, but the one with,
it was good
with Chloe and I forgot the Nadine, the other character.
Nadine.
And both were pretty fan favorite esque characters. So I think you can do something with either characters that are related to Drake or something else in that same universe where Nathan Drake still resides. You know what I mean? But I think Nathan Drake's story is complete. And the reason why I think it's complete is because the perfection of A Thief's End. Wrap up me praising this game, I talked about its story a lot. Dude, that grappling hook.
so much fun.
It's so much fun. It's such a small thing. When you think about it, in the grand scheme of things, this very cinematic, expensive game, and you're like, what's the most fun thing about it? Oh, dude, you can just swing on a grappling hook. It's so much fun.
It's ridiculous how something, like, you get grappling hooks in all kinds of games, and like, yeah, it's a cool little feature, but they made a way to make it like a core gameplay for Uncharted.
And to talk about something else in my top 20, Arkham Knight, that incorporated the Batmobile. And that's like that game's biggest flaw, that its story had to overcome the Batmobile being such a prevalent thing and being such a chore. Uncharted, the grappling hook being incorporated into everything, I was happy with, because it was just so fun. So I guess the duality of that was pretty funny to me. As for my number 8, I'm going to go with Super Mario 64.
Ooh, another nostalgia.
The level designs in this game are unreal. Especially considering the time it released.
Yeah. I was going to say it's no Mario Sunshine, but yeah, it's all right.
It was really tough between this and Sunshine for me.
Really?
Yeah. I didn't want to put both on my top 20, but I kind of went with quality and what it means to the gaming industry more than honestly my favorite with that pick.
Okay. Because I know a lot of Mario fans, Sunshine, for some reason, is like the no-no game.
I don't understand it. It's just really good. Honestly, it's a lot like 64.
It's fun.
Yeah, it's just a fun, tropical version of 64 to me. But as for my number 7, I've been staring this game down ever since I started talking about my 10 through 7. The original Mass Effect. The game that started it all. This game is amazing. It is not the best in terms of action. Mass Effect 2 and 3 are better in the combat department. In terms of story and the RPG elements, this game is phenomenal. The story choices you will make that will go into 2 and 3, the way you could build your character, the way that the characters are written, the story itself, everything is either a 8 out of 10, a 9 out of 10, or just a straight up 10 out of 10. Like, it is that good of quality throughout. The graphics, if you're playing the original, probably the worst thing I can say about it. It does not really hold up. The Legendary Edition, way better. That's all. I was so happy replaying Mass Effect 1 through the Legendary Edition, because it is a huge improvement. Not only with the graphics, but also with the Mako. So, Mass Effect 1 makes my top 10. Michael, do you have any other thoughts on my 10 through 7? And after that, feel free to go to your 6 through 4.
Yeah, no, I think those are some real solid picks, especially Mario 64. I mean, that's just an iconic game in and of itself. I see that being on plenty of people's top 3 of all time, because it's just flat out a great game. I actually never finished Star Fox 64 myself. So you'd be like, oh yeah, I finished when I was a kid. So I'm like, oh, well. boo to you because I never finished it myself. But yeah, I think you had a good list right there. And actually, Taylor, you know, is what's going on?
I was going to say, to make you kind of feel worse, it was the first game I ever beat as a kid. I think I beat it when I was like 5 or 6.
Wow, man. Thanks.
Yeah. To be fair, I had to beat it multiple times to get the good ending because I just did not understand what I had to do. Like, I had to annoy the shit out of my brother to show me what I had to do. And then I had to go do it myself.
Oh, a lot of those old games were like that, to where it's we don't actually tell you what to do. We don't hold your hand. And a lot of people are like, oh man, I miss those kind of games. Like, not me. But that's one of the reasons I didn't finish it as a kid, because I didn't know what the hell I was doing.
And not to pull the back in my day card, but you know, back in our day, we didn't have Google to go to and be like, hey, let's get a guide for this. It's not like the Nerd Sash. Like, I could just pull up the Nerd Sash back then and be like, let me see a guide for Star Fox 64. Nah, man, I had to ask around, and hopefully somebody knew the answer who's actually played the game.
Yeah, somebody who had the latest issue of Nintendo Power.
Yeah.
All right. As for me, from line number 6, and, you know, it's kind of weird that you had Uncharted on your list, because at number 6, I have Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. This game right here, Taylor. This is the game that sold people on a PlayStation 3.
Yep.
You talked about how the grappling hook was the big thing for you. For me, with Uncharted 3, it was the sand physics. Because when they showed the game off, they showed Drake in the desert, and like the sand physics in that game was ridiculous.
Naughty Dog gets people in the weirdest ways. It's Uncharted do, 3, the sand physics. Uncharted 4, it's a grappling hook.
Yeah. Just the graphics alone in Uncharted 3, it was absolutely ridiculous. I will admit, the story in Uncharted 3 isn't really the best out of the franchise.
I love the intro.
No, the intro was great. They had some great set pieces.
The stuff with Nate meeting Sully is very well done.
Oh yeah, no, I love that kind of stuff, but I still think 4, I like your pick, because I think 4 did a better job with the story than 3, and yeah. I like Uncharted 2's story more than Uncharted 3, but it has some great set pieces. But yeah, I absolutely loved Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception. Didn't care for the multiplayer, but I played that single player so many times, man. I don't know, you like, if it were released today, honestly, Taylor, I'd have been playing it right now while we record. But I can't, because my PlayStation 3 is put up somewhere else. But Uncharted 3, that's my pick. And at number 5, here we go, Taylor. We're in my top 5 right now. Oh, snaps. Now, I know we're not allowed to do franchises, but for me, it would definitely be Ratchet and Clank, the franchise. It takes up my entirety of the top 5, because I don't think there is a bad Ratchet and Clank game except for Ratchet and Clank.
Wait, are you finishing your top 5 right now?
We're doing 5, 6, 5, and 4.
Well, I'm saying, is that going to take up your entire top 5? Is the actual?
Oh, I wish, but no.
Okay, you're just exaggerating. Okay, I gotcha.
Oh yeah,
I was like, wait a minute, is this actually your last pick?
All of them right now. It's just all Ratchet and Clank.
But I said, that's a very controversial way to end this. I don't know how I'm going to fill up time.
You're going to top that?
Yeah. I actually have different games. You were like, nah, top 5 is a whole franchise.
Yeah, he's like, man, you did so great for number 20 through 5. That he just dropped the ball, man.
Okay. Okay, hold on. For the sake of this list, I'll allow you to put the whole franchise. But you also have to tell me, if you had to pick one, as in what's your favorite, what is it?
Right, okay, yeah, because I actually have which one I was going to say, but Ratchet and Clank, the only bad one was the reboot. Other than that, my favorite would be Ratchet and Clank Future, A Crack in Time. It was, again, a game on the PlayStation 3, showed off what the PlayStation 3 could do. It was the game that had everybody think, like, oh my goodness, we have Pixar-level graphics now. Like, that was the thing that hit back then. It was like, how well can we do these graphics? And Ratchet and Clank came on the scene and was like, yo, you guys like Pixar movies? We could look just as good as any high-budget Hollywood animated film. and it looked absolutely gorgeous. The gameplay was always fun. That's just, Insomniac Games is just good at that. The humor is there. I like the story. They were starting to get more into separating Ratchet and Clank and making them, they were already their own characters. But with Future, they were really making them their own. Like, yeah, there was Agent Clank on the PSP. But with Futures of Crack in Time, they gave Clank such a big role in the overall franchise to where he pretty much became a Time Lord. And Clank and Ratchet just became the hero. So they really made Clank his own character and made him separate from Ratchet, which was really cool. And this is before a rift apart. And, you know, I'm glad they continued that instead of just like ignoring what they did with Future. They went back to making a thing to where Ratchet and Clank are their own separate characters. And I would go with Future. I have to remember that you have to put the word Future in there. But Ratchet and Clank Future, A Crack in Time was that game that helped separate those two characters and made them so much better than what they already were. So out of my whole Ratchet and Clank love, I would go with Future in general, but A Crack in Time.
That's understandable. And also to talk about the rest of the franchise, because I'm not a huge Ratchet and Clank fan. You said that the reboot game was not, it was probably the only bad game out of that. And I would actually agree, because that's the one that was tied in with the movie that basically was the same thing.
Yeah.
I don't get why they did that. Like, I know, like, we talk about video game adaptations, and a lot of the time, it's more like circumstantial to where you're like, you want it to follow the story. But yeah. I don't think people mean literally a one for one. Like, exactly. Yeah, unfortunately. You make some kind of change.
Yeah, but I can actually explain to you why they did that way. Because they wanted to reboot the franchise, because Future actually tied everything up to where they were done. Like, there were no more stories to tell. Like, they became these massive heroes. They saved the day. They saved the universe. And I don't want to spoil anything for those who want to go back and play Future. They found a way to actually wrap up Ratchet and Clank's story, not only as heroes, but as friends. So really, it was one of the, it was a God of War kind of thing to where you had no choice but to find a way to reboot it. And I guess they found the movie as a way to make it a fresh start for a new generation that's probably never played Ratchet and Clank, which I'm not mad at them for doing it. I'm like, okay, that's cool. Remind everybody why Ratchet and Clank was great in the first place. But the game was just boring, to be honest.
And Rift Apart ended up being more so that thing. Even though, sadly, it seemed like Rift Apart kind of got screwed over, I think. From everything I saw, quality-wise, it seemed like a really good game. But just the when it came out and how it came out, it was basically, to me, I think it was asked to be a console seller in a time where nobody was really going to be able to. Yeah, you couldn't find the console. And also, not a lot of people had money to get consoles like that.
Yeah,
so,
it was one of those unfortunate things. And man, I think it deserves more love. And I really do hope that Sony has not given up on the Ratchet & Clank franchise, because I like Rift Apart and what they were doing with it. And the stuff that they were teasing was like, oh man, we can get more spinoffs. Because they did that in the past. They did some pretty cool spinoffs. And I want them to come back. I don't want them to just stick with the same old, because what made Ratchet and Clank so fun was that the team behind it were always finding new interesting ways to make cool guns, cool characters, take advantage of the hardware. And I would like to see more of Ratchet and Clank, because that is, honestly, right next to Killzone, my favorite PlayStation franchise.
Yeah. It's a good pick, man. It really is. I really appreciate you actually giving me a specific game, though, too. So it's not just like, I'm going to cheat and just pick a whole franchise. So I appreciate you giving me a actual game to go alongside with it.
So that's the guy who put Resident Evil 4 and the remake in the same slot?
Two in the remake in the same slot. And hey, I didn't talk about a whole franchise there, but I get why you would talk about the whole franchise, because it's just an all-encompassing thing. But yeah, what's your number four?
All right, at number four, and remember, folks, this isn't really something like, oh, these are the best-selling things of all time. This is just one of those things where I'm like, yo, I would actually replay these so many times. And at number four, for me, is Sly Cooper. And again, it's one of those things where I wish I could be in the franchise.
That got me because what? I did the same thing. Because you're looking at it, and you're like, this shouldn't be in the... No offense to Sly Cooper or like Star Fox 64, but you're looking at where it's at on the list and you're like,
it's pretty high.
Shouldn't be that high up there. But you have to think about what this list is again, and you're like, no, it should be, but we need to point that out. So I get what you just did there.
Yeah. I have to remind people like you did with yours. Like, yeah, this doesn't mean these are like
qualities,
super premium.
Quality was put into consideration for everything on our list. So it's not like we just picked a bunch of bad games. And I'm not saying Sly Cooper's a bad game. Sly Cooper's a great game. It's a great franchise. But again, I know exactly what you're doing because I did the same thing with Star Fox where I was like, this shouldn't be on like a top 10 best as much as I love it. But you know what? My nostalgia, my love for this game, it makes it even better to where it would be probably my top 50 best games, but it goes the way up to 10 for me because of nostalgia and how much I actually love it. So I understand why you were laughing there and going like, I need to make this clear to you guys.
Yeah, for you all start burning down our podcast. But yeah, for me, it was tied between Sly Cooper 2 and 3, even though I love the franchise in general, but I'm going to go with Sly Cooper 2 because for some reason I just have a fondness for that game. But for the franchise itself, I just absolutely love the cartoony look of Sly Cooper. I love the style of it. I think the character himself, Sly, is just, he's just this wisecracking, just, I don't want to say sly because that's just a straight up pun because that's why they named him that way, but he's just this charming, wonderful, lovable, funny character. And he's not even like a George Clooney kind of jerkish kind of way, but in a, I know I'm cool, but I'm not too cool for my friends kind of thing. Like, he stayed loyal to his buddies. Even after one of his friends ended up in a wheelchair, he never goes off and like, oh man, you guys are slowing me down. You're holding me back, yada, yada. And I was like, no, we're a team. We're a family. Well, if one messed up, we all help to clear it up. And it was just one of those things to where he's just such a lovable character because he's there for his friends. And he's not a thief in a sense of, I just want to steal things. He's not like a Lupin the Third. It's more of, he steals stuff, but in the games, it's focused on him stealing back his family's legacy. And I think that's what makes it lovable, is no honor among thieves. And that's something that you see in both Sly Cooper franchise and even Uncharted among thieves. So it was a cool theme that they ran with these games. And I just love all the characters. Bentley is such a cool character. He's probably one of the coolest nerds. If Steve Urkel ever became a criminal, he would be Bentley. And I know that sounds funny, and it is, and it's absolutely wonderful. And if you never played Sly Cooper, there is a collection. There's the Sly Cooper Original Trilogy Remastered Collection. Go out there, pick it up. It's fun. I think they even have it on digital. And I feel bad for... hold on, let me see this team's name. Sanzaru Games, because they did a wonderful job picking up the franchise with Sly Cooper Thieves in Time, which is Sly Cooper 4. And I think they did a wonderful job picking up the franchise, and that is no small feat. So shout out to that team. But yes, Uncharted, Sly Cooper 2 is my top pick right there.
I get why you would say Uncharted, though, because that's also a fantastic franchise. You just got done talking about it. You can't go wrong with anything you said here. Like, Ratchet & Clank, iconic franchise. Sly Cooper, amazing franchise. I don't think it's up there with Ratchet & Clank or Uncharted, that are two just of the top legendary. But Sly Cooper, I think for a lot of people, was like, man, it was underrated. Heavily underrated franchise that just, it needs more love. So, yeah, man, I can't fault any of your picks here, especially the Uncharted one, because it's, you could put any of the Uncharteds into a top 10 favorite list, and any, you can go like, I get it. I see why. I mean, they're all great in their own way. That's the best way to put it.
Yeah.
Getting into my 6 through 4. Number 6, Metal Gear Solid / Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes, whichever version you prefer. Honestly, I know there's controversy about Twin Snakes. I don't fully get why. You know, the GameCube version. Because I just think the GameCube version's better. Because, you know, graphically, it's better.
Hey, careful. You might have fanboys come after you.
I don't. I genuinely, I want to know why. Like, what is the actual huge difference between the two? Because I don't think there is, as far as I know.
I think I think it was more of a, people felt that it was a PlayStation franchise.
That's possible, I guess, but I don't know. Either way, Metal Gear Solid, amazing game. I mean, this is Solid Snake infiltrating the Shadow Moses, taking out super-powered ex-military agents, and just insane boss battles all around. You have a great story, has a lot of exposition. This is Kojima at his finest here. So you can imagine what's here. Yeah. The gameplay is really good. The voice acting is as campy as you think it'd be, but I think it really works for its story and what they're doing with the game itself. It's just a legendary video game. It's in a perfect setting. It's got great gameplay. It's got an amazing story, excellent characters. I just cannot say enough good about this game. Speaking of things I can't stop praising, Call of Duty Black Ops 2 is my number 5.
Oh my goodness, Taylor! Oh, you had me. You had me with your list until this one. What? Why?
Let me see if I can talk you into it. So, this game also is a little bit nostalgia for me. This game came out when I was a senior in high school, and it's the game I play with a lot of my friends, and it's what I, it's like this and the OG Modern Warfare 2 is what I remember the most playing Call of Duty back in the day. And it's not just all nostalgia for me, it's also the campaign is absolutely insanely good. It's got different story decisions you can make that will influence the ending, which I think is something Call of Duty can really go back into and thrive with if they wanted to. So its campaign's awesome. Its multiplayer was really good. Really underrated multiplayer with some great maps. And it was that futuristic style without being overly like jetpacks and all sorts of laser weapons. Like, no, it was futuristic, but it wasn't too far. You know? It was that perfect middle ground that I think Call of Duty will go too far in the other direction in the future. And in zombies, which started out really bad with Transit and the Die Rise map, which I actually really liked Die Rise's map. I thought it was not as bad as people made it out to be. But the zombies experience really shifted when Mob of the Dead came out. And then Buried, and then Origins, back to back to back. Those three maps are some of the best in Call of Duty Zombies history. It is the second best Zombies experience to me, right behind Black Ops 3. And especially what Mob of the Dead did, what Origins did with the staffs, Mob of the Dead with the hell, not just the map of Alcatraz itself, but the Hell's Retriever Tomahawk, like all that stuff was just so... Innovative isn't the right word, but I guess it's what I can say. It's innovative, but also it just gave the player something that the zombies experience was really starting to lack. And that was fun. Like, it once again became a third pillar of the franchise. So with a great campaign, with a great multiplayer experience, and with a zombie experience that started out bad but ended up being legendary, I think he got one of the best Call of Duties of all time, and I just cannot leave it off a top 20 favorite games of all time list.
You know what? I can accept that. Yeah. I mean, that's pretty cool. I was never a fan of zombie mode, but yeah. I mean, if it's something that reminds you of you and your mates and, you know, the shenanigans you all got into. Okay. Yeah. You made your point. It's fair. That's fair.
As for my number four, going to go back to the quality aspect here and be like, hey, man, I don't know what to do. I can't leave this off my top five. It's just, it's got to be there. The Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time.
Oh, a classic.
The thing I think about with Zelda the most, thinking about Ocarina of Time, is that switching back and forth between Adult Link and Link. And how honestly you think back to it, like how cool that was. To be like, young Link, you're going around this entire area and you're like, man, this is really cool. And how open it is to you, like how open it is in what we'd see in later games. And then whenever you're Adult Link and you're seeing this apocalyptic setting and how the city of Hyrule gets absolutely fucking decimated and there's zombies in the court, in the center marketplace. And you're like, man, I gotta fix this. Like, there's just something about the atmosphere of Ocarina of Time that is just legendary to me.
I think it's legendary to everybody, even if you don't play Zelda games. I think that's just one that in Majora's Mask is just one of the games that you just know, even if you don't care for the franchise.
Majora's Mask is a game that I think the developers wanted to delve into deeper subject matter. But I'm not sure that a lot of players, and I'm not trying to call players stupid. Like, I was a kid when this came out. I was a stupid kid. I didn't understand it. I'm like, man, this is boring. It's kind of lame. The cycle just resets after 3 days and the moon crashes into the town. Like, that sucks. But you can tell, like, looking back on it, and you're like, man, you know they were trying to go for something deeper with that story that I'm not sure that they got the chance to fully do.
I think that's still the darkest Zelda story.
Oh, it's incredibly dark. That in Twilight Princess. But that was visually dark. This was just dark, period. Like,
yeah, I think story-wise, even to this day, even with Breath of the Wild and Tears of the Kingdom, I still think Majora's Mask might still be the scariest and darkest storyline.
And that's also keeping in mind what I was just saying about Ocarina of Time. Whenever you get the Master Sword as Link and you turn into Adult Link, you go back into the courtyard and you're like, oh, it's a bunch of zombies here. Oh, shit, the entire world has gone to shit. I have to stop this Ganondorf fella.
How long have I been gone?
Yeah, how long have I been gone? So when you say, like, yeah, Majora's Mask was a way darker story, that tells you how dark it gets.
Yeah.
Yeah, anything to add about my 6 through 4 before going into your top 3? We're in the end game now.
No, as I pretty much agree with your list, and you even sold me on Black Ops, because I was never a Black Ops fan. I was one of those people who were like, yo, I don't really care for this franchise anymore. But yeah, zombies just didn't do it for me. But I did love the original Modern Warfare. So, hey, Black Ops, that's cool. In fact, isn't this supposed to be a new Black Ops this year?
What is it? The report is it's Black Ops Gulf War?
Gulf War, yeah, that's the one. Yeah. Oh, well, we'll see sooner or later. By sooner or later, I probably mean like much sooner, because I'm sure Microsoft's going to want that out there as soon as possible. But as for my top 3, all right, Taylor, did you know that I am bad at RPGs and I don't play them that often?
I do know that because you tell me a lot that you're bad at RPGs and you don't play them often. Sometimes just unprompted, like 2 in the morning, I'll get a Discord text from you and be like, dude, I'm bad at RPGs. And I'm like, are you okay?
Who hurt you? Final Fantasy did something to me. I'm joking. I don't play Final Fantasy. Ha. Although I do have the original Final Fantasy VII on PlayStation disc in my room right now.
What's your number three? I'm very curious now. Like, you've
my number three is actually a JRPG, which Japanese developers actually hate that term, so I apologize for using it. But back in the day, that's what we used to call it. But yes, I have an RPG here that was exclusive for a while to the Xbox 360 that I felt was super underrated. And it came from Bandai Namco Games, and it is called Eternal Sonata. Eternal Sonata is one of those games that took me for a spin because, again, Taylor, I don't play RPGs that much. I'm not that great at them, even though I will play the hell out of certain things like Mass Effect Trilogy. Eternal Sonata really grabbed me with its gorgeous graphics. And again, this came back on the 360, and later on, it came out on the PS3. You take part of this world, and that might be in his composer's dreams as he's dying, and it might be reality. He's not sure. He's dying. He doesn't know if he's sleeping or in a coma. But he thinks he's sleeping. He thinks he's dreaming. He thinks this is just what he sees before he passes on. But one of the characters in his quote unquote dream believes that he is trying to separate himself from reality, and that the world that she's in truly is reality. Because people who are super sick, they don't really allude to it, but it's a story about cancer, people dying from cancer. People who are super sick and are dying gain magic abilities. For one girl, she gains the ability to heal people. Chopin, yes, based off of the famous composer Chopin, he is also dying. This is the time when he was on his deathbed, which is where the dream sequences comes from. He gains the ability to use his magic, to use his music as magic. And they team up with these two homeless brothers who is going up against an evil, not an empire, but an evil kingdom that's starting a war and is trying to take over everything. It uses the music from the actual composer Chopin as part of its world. And part of its battle music, which I think is really cool. And it mixes real-time and turn-based strategy for combat to where you are free to move around the field as much as you want. You have a meter that drains the more you move. And you could put yourself in a position to flank enemies or to get multiple characters to crowd over one enemy and have everybody chain attacks together, or to have one person attack and another person heals, another person defends, and the enemies have the same chance to do that. So you're seeing everybody move around in real time, and you're able to plan around that as the AI plans themselves around you. And the game is just so fun to play, and it's so gorgeous to look at. I played that, for someone who doesn't like RPGs, I played that game and finished it multiple times, Taylor. I absolutely adore that game, and it's definitely in my top five, and it found a way to sneak itself into my top three.
I can't speak a whole lot about that, but it sounds like a very emotional story that just would probably hit a lot of people. I'm sure it probably, considering it's in your top three, I assume it hit you pretty hard as well. And that very respectable pick, and that is a game that I do know a lot of people absolutely adore.
Yeah, if you ever get a chance to find it, pick it up, please do. It's worth your time. It is an absolutely beautiful game, and it made my top list for a reason. It really is worth your time. For my next pick, and now we're down to the ride, we got our top two. Mine is Max Payne 3. Now, Taylor, you made it hard for me. Yeah, you made it hard for me because I wanted to pick Max Payne 1 and 3.
Are you wanting like to Max cheat Payne here 2. Again? I use your little cheating powers.
As a host, I think I have the ability to do that. But as a friend, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to respect the rules a little bit. And
I'm the host of Nerds and pick movies. 3. Okay, I understand what it's like to be a host and having that power, but you can't let it go to your head, all right?
Hey, I let you slide with Remake and the original, but yeah.
I know I kind of cheated in this list too with Metal Gear Solid and Twin Snakes. But besides the point.
But yeah, I'm going to go ahead with Max Payne 3. Man, I hate doing that because Max Payne 3 was done by Rockstar. And man, they absolutely killed it. They gave it that Rockstar feel. And it was absolutely awesome. It was ridiculously awesome, man. And Max Payne really does fit in that Rockstar mold to where, yeah, it's not Grand Theft Auto, but we have a chance to do this Liam Neeson, Vin Diesel kind of thing going on with Max Payne, to where he's just this old grumpy guy who's tired. You know, he's no longer a police officer. He's no longer an investigator. He's no longer working freelance. I mean, he's not working freelance. He's a bodyguard. The guy's getting too old for this shit. And it was just such a great ending to his story. If this is even how they're going to end it, if they don't move beyond Max Payne 3, I'm completely okay with that. But also didn't like it because, man, Remedy deserves a spot in my list because they make some of the coolest games. And I want Max Payne 1 to be in it because I absolutely love Max Payne 1. But Max Payne 3, it's just, man, it seems like everything that I wanted from Max Payne 1 and 2 and didn't even know it. But gosh darn it, man. Yeah, Max Payne 3, it's up there. It's in my top 3 list. All right, but here we go. Are you ready for number 1, Taylor?
I am ready for number 1. What is your favorite game of all time? The expectations are high.
And here it is, my number 1. Now, while we can go through so many more, because we have a lot of favorites, all right? This isn't like the definitive edition of our list. We have so many that we wish we could put on this list. In fact, I think our top 10, we kept saying how we want to put this game on there and this game on there. For me, at my number 1, Halo 3 ODST. Not even the main Halo franchise. It's Halo 3 ODST.
Wow.
Takes the cake for me. Yeah.
I have a hot take about this, and you're not going to like it. Please continue. No, I'm joking. ODST is actually really good. The one I have a hot take about is Reach. Reach is overrated. I'll say it now.
Ooh,
ODST and Halo 3, like, those two, I get its goated status. Halo Reach,
oh, yeah.
Don't understand it. Like, it's got an amazing ending, but other than that...
I loved Reach, but ODST was just something else. And, you know, honestly, it's tied, in my opinion. I know I can't do this for the rules, so this is off the books. ODST is tied with Halo 2 as my number 1. I love Halo 2. The story, the gameplay, the multiplayer. All of it. The trifecta, smooth as butter. ODST was able to do something so much more as it broke the mold of Halo by allowing us to actually be part of the orbital drop shock troopers. And it felt different. It's like, oh man, I don't feel like this powerful Master Chief character. I feel like a human. And it really goes to show, like, yeah, Master Chief is the demon for a reason. When you play him, this is why you're so cool and unstoppable. And when you play as an ODST, you feel like you have to kind of work your way around a little bit. Plus, it was great to fight in New Mombasa. That's what it's called, right? Yeah, New Mombasa. And, you know, finding the, what's that little computer's name? It's not Janitor.
I don't remember. Off the top of my head, I'm not a huge Halo fan.
Ew.
Like, I played the games, but I mostly played them for the multiplayer. That said, like, not to step on your toes here, but yeah, ODST, just fantastic, because of everything you were just saying. Like, it is such a good juxtaposition between you being the super soldier Master Chief and being like, alright, I'm just playing as a regular soldier now. Good fucking luck. Bye.
Yeah, and you're a rookie. Don't forget that. You just joined. But ODST, the gameplay felt tighter than ever. I don't know how Bungie did it. Now I want everybody to remember, ODST was supposed to be a DLC for Halo 3, which is why I had the Halo 3 name on there. But it got to the point to where they did expand it to where it was a single player game. And I was one of those people who were like, oh, you guys really did that to us. That sucks. I'm going to buy it, but that sucks that you guys would do that to us. And when I played it, I was like, damn. Still good.
Damn, I kind of get it now.
Yeah, you dropped it on the floor, but it's still good. I'm still eating it. Oh, man, how dare you. Also, they introduced Firefight. Oh, man, Firefight is horde mode for ODST. One of the best multiplayer modes, man. Me and my friends played the hell out of it. It was just so much fun to play. And yeah, I get why you probably didn't care for Reach. ODST, definitely the game worth playing.
ODST is how a lot of people... How I feel about ODST is how a lot of people feel about Reach. Like, I really think ODST is the underrated installment of the franchise. Whereas Reach is the... It's the thing where a lot of people... Again, I think it's because of the ending of Reach. And it's an amazing ending. It's one of the best of all time. I'll say that. But I remember replaying through Reach like a year and a half ago. And me and my buddy were playing it. We're like 5-6 missions in. And we're like, does this kind of suck? My buddy's like, yeah, it's pretty boring. I'm like, all right, let's play something else. Like, it was a bummer. And ooh, I remember replaying ODST and not having that feeling at all. I was like, oh, thank God. It's fun playing through these missions.
It's actually good. Yeah, no,
it's not good when I'm playing Halo and I'm bored by the gameplay. That's how I kind of felt with Reach compared to 3 and ODST.
I think when it came to Reach is because a lot of players, including myself, who read the books about the fall of Reach, and I've heard hints of the fall of Reach. I think it was for us, it was great to be able to play that part in the Halo franchise's history, in this lore, where you got to play as somebody other than Master Chief, where you got to play as some of the other Spartans and see their personalities and how they are. And I think that's what really captured for a lot of fans was that we got to fight, experience, and witness the fall of Reach.
Yeah.
Also, the little AI friend, I was trying to figure out the reason I got it mixed up with janitor. It's called the superintendent.
But it's an awesome top three, man. Eternal Sonata, I get it. I have seen a lot of love for this game over the years. And from what you've told me, it sounds like an emotional roller coaster of a story that I'd understand why you would absolutely have it in a top 10 list like this. Max Payne 3. Honestly, I expected more Max Payne on your list. I expected Alan Wake.
I know you're going to say Alan Wake, yeah.
All throughout your top 20. And somehow Max Payne 3 was the only thing to hit here. And I was like, I knew it was coming. But honestly, yeah. I thought it'd be number one. But then when you got to your number one, I'm really glad you said ODST. That's all I'm saying. Halo 3, I wasn't all into Halo 2 because Halo 3 was really the first one I played. 3 and ODST was the ones I'd be like, I get it. Any of the other ones that aren't Halo 2, 3, or ODST, I would have been a little critical of you ever. But I totally get it, man. It's especially, like, you had a great list, but you brought it with your top 3. That's what I'll say.
Yeah, if we did our original top 25, the problem is I couldn't find those 5 extra games that I wanted. But yeah, Alan Wake would have definitely been in there. Probably even Quantum Break.
Ooh, that would have been controversial. But
I stick by Quantum Break. Quantum Break was awesome.
Getting into my top 3, so we can get out of here. At number 3, another Metal Gear Solid. Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater. Dude, this game's story is a masterpiece. An absolute masterpiece. The way it breaks down the guy that has been known to this point to be the villain of the series, Big Boss, to show you his origins, to show you why he ends up the way he does, how he starts out with the codename Snake. Naked Snake is his codename. I'm not going to spoil everything, but by the end, he gets the codename. And you feel, you know how a lot of movies, whenever something happens and it's like, oh man, there's some fan service behind it, so you have that like good feeling in your stomach. At the end of Metal Gear Solid 3, whenever that fan service comes, you don't feel good in your stomach. It's that like, it just feels wrong. This feels all twisted in a bad way. I really get, like, Big Boss did nothing wrong here. Like, I get why he became an asshole.
You're really going to go with he did nothing wrong?
No, he did some bad things, but still besides the point. I get his motivation, at least initially. But man, it's such a phenomenal story. Its gameplay is great. Its setting in the jungle. It's so good, man. It's hard to like describe these games because we're just like, oh, this is great. This is good. Because, I mean, what else are we going to say about it? We're in now our top three. Like everything in our top three we would consider to be masterpieces. And that's what Snake Eater is. From its setting, from its story, the gameplay. I mean, the only thing I do dislike it about the game is Kojima goes, you know, he goes into his Kojima-isms a little too much in the game. But that's about it.
Isn't that every game, though? Like every
Metal Gear? It is. I think Metal Gear Solid has that issue as well. But Metal Gear Solid 3 in particular, for a game that I think is so perfect in so many different ways, and especially with its themes, that it stands out a little more. But still, this is a 10 out of 10 game. Speaking of 10 out of 10 games,
oh, snap.
My number 2, I have Red Dead Redemption 2.
Oh, wow.
You thought
I forgot all
one.
About that. I've actually forgot all about that. I know you have a great love. Yeah.
This is one of the most phenomenal games I've ever played. To whereas when this game ends, when this game ended for the first time and the credits hit, I just put my controller down and was just like, I'm just going to watch the credits for a bit. I don't know what the... You know when a game just drains you? Like you're done? Emotionally? Yeah. Like somehow physically you're just tired at that point?
Yeah.
That's how it was at the end of Red Dead Redemption 2. I was just like, what a journey. I'm good, man. And then there's an epilogue to it, to which I'm both happy and sad about, because I'm like, I can't keep playing. It's 4 a.m. I got work to go. I got work tomorrow. I can't do this. And then I'm like, well, if I only sleep 3 hours tonight, I can take a nap when I get back home, and I can play more Red Dead. It's a phenomenal game, man, from its gameplay, the hunting, the missions. The mission design is probably my criticism, and that's more just a Rockstar thing in general. I think the way Rockstar handles the way they do missions, to where it's way more restrictive than it was back in the day, is honestly a detriment to their games now. But all of that is overshadowed to me because of the story and the characters, especially its main protagonist, Arthur Morgan, who I would consider to be the greatest protagonist in gaming history.
Oh, wow. That's massive praise, man.
I would talk more about Red Dead Redemption 2, but I've talked so much about it over our time doing this podcast that it just feels redundant. So I'm just going to go ahead and get into my number one. Number one, Mass Effect 2. Michael, you played Mass Effect 2, correct?
I absolutely love Mass Effect 2. I think
it's one of the best
in the franchise.
Everybody listening to this podcast who's played Mass Effect 2, you get it. Like, I don't need an explanation.
Yeah, no, it's just one of those things where it really improved on the first one.
In almost every way.
Yeah.
Almost every way, it improves on the first one. And then we get to the new squad that you get, to where the first it's like, oh no, you're not gonna get all of your squad mates from the first game, and you're a bit disappointed by that. And you meet your new squad mates and you're like, who the fuck is Rex? I'm joking, Rex is amazing and I would not trade Rex for anybody, but I would with like Ashley Williams or Caden Alenko. Those two fucking suck, and I'm so glad to have literally anybody else in my Mass Effect 2 squad over them. Mass Effect 2, with its characters, with its side missions for the characters that gives you their loyalty, and then off of that, decisions you make, what you decide to upgrade, the sides you decide to take, and then when you get to that final mission, and you actually have to be Commander Shepard, key word being commander, having to make calls, tough decisions, and those tough decisions will heavily impact how many of those squad mates you love so much are going to come back with you, if any, if you even come back.
Man, and you know, that's one of the things about Mass Effect that I just absolutely enjoyed. Like, there was weight to your decisions.
Anybody could die at any time, it feels like, in this game. That's so hard to do.
So, yeah, during the what is called the suicide mission.
Yep.
Bro, I freaked out the whole time because I didn't want to make a single mistake.
On replays, it's so much easier, too, because you're like, okay, I get it. I get what you're supposed to do. But, yeah, that first time you're playing through it, part of you wants to also look it up and be like, I got to know who to take because I'm not making the wrong decision. But you also don't want to ruin it for yourself. So yeah, you're making a tough decision outside the game so you can make a tough decision inside the game.
And it made me sad because I was like, I don't want to lose any of these people. And I was fortunate enough to bring some of my favorite people with me on said missions. I was like, oh my goodness, no. Only to find out that it didn't matter because they're going to have to go on missions. They have to go on their own missions. And you got to command from afar. So you can't even be there to protect them.
Yep. Who are you going to trust to do X, Y, and Z? I'm trying not to spoil everything about it, but it's just there's so many decisions you have to make. And you get to the very end and you're like, oh, thank God. As far as I know, everybody's still alive. And then the game's like, oh no, we have one last decision for you. That big boss you just faced, what you gonna do with it? It's just,
And it just keeps on coming.
It's unrelenting in the best possible way. And it's just the ending. It's not like this is our top 20 favorite endings of all time. No, the game itself is filled with nothing but amazing missions and amazing decisions you have to make. On top of that, it has excellent combat. That's heavily improved from the first game.
Yeah, I know a lot of people didn't like that they added ammunition into the game, because that's one of the cool things about the first one.
Yeah, was that, is true.
You have to reload in a way that is just a cooldown. You know, there's no reload, it's a cooldown. And I was like, you know what? That makes sense. I actually don't mind that. But yeah, in the second game, they switched over to
thermal clips.
Yeah, like batteries or something.
Yeah, which is partially a downgrade, but also I get it. And honestly, the animation to reload is pretty cool.
I love it, to be honest.
I never really struggled with ammunition, really. And if I did, I still had, like, the squad to, you know, I had my squad abilities and multiple other weapons to switch to for variety. So it wasn't, I think the problem was, is in Mass Effect 1, they probably found that players were just using one weapon, and that was it.
Oh, yeah. Because you didn't need to switch to anything else.
Yeah.
Everything was unlimited.
Towards Mass Effect 2... and mostly 3, because there is a weapon in Mass Effect 3 that is like the Mass Effect 1 assault rifle, where it just overheats, and that's it. There's no actual ammunition. But Mass Effect 2 specifically, you have to, like, you'll run out of ammo with your assault rifle and be like, shit, alright, well, let me use this sniper rifle that I rarely use, and then you might find yourself being more of a sniper later, because you're like, man, it's really easy to headshot in this game. So I kind of get it. I'm not saying it was the best decision, but I kind of get why.
Yeah, design-wise, it did make sense.
Yeah. And that probably is the only real complaint about the game?
I would say so, yeah.
If that's your complaint about Mass Effect 2, man, how good is the game?
Yeah, you're doing something right. I think you're doing everything right.
Because, yeah, the rest of it I would really consider. Like, this... everything in our top threes, I know I said, like, this is masterpiece, 10 out of 10 games. I would consider my top three especially 10 out of 10 games.
Yeah, forget Mike's games. My games, no, on the other hand.
No, I don't want to speak for you here.
No, no, I know, I'm just messing with you.
Yeah.
My games are true 10 out of 10s.
Well, how about you go through your top 10 and then we'll get out of here. Recap it for the audience and for me here. It's just a close up shop, tie it all into a bow.
Yes. For me and my top 10s, I had Kadem, Criminal Origins, Need for Speed Underground, Killzone 2, Star Wars Republic Commando, Uncharted 3, Drake's Deception, Ratchet and Clank Future, A Crack in Time, Sly Cooper, the franchise, but mostly I went with Sly Cooper 2, Max Payne 3, Eternal Sonata, Need for Speed Underground, and of course, Halo 3 ODST. Taylor, what about you? What were your 10?
My 10 were number 10, Star Fox 64, number 9, Uncharted 4, A Thieves' End, number 8, Super Mario 64, number 7, Mass Effect 1, number 6, Metal Gear Solid / Metal Gear Solid Twin Snakes. If I had to pick one out of there, I would pick Twin Snakes. Number 5, Call of Duty Black Ops 2. Number 4, The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time. Number 3, Metal Gear Solid 3, Snake Eater. Number 2, Red Dead Redemption 2. And number 1, Mass Effect 2. I really liked our list, man. This was a really fun topic. Yeah, I'm glad we did it.
Pretty good list. Yeah, I just wish I could find... I just wish I could have found 5 more.
Do a top 25. We can probably have some fun with this kind of topic in the future. Maybe not favorite, but like we could do like a top 25 best games of all time. But instead of both of us having our own lists, we're basically just drafting a list. Whereas we're fighting for each pick, essentially.
Hey, who knows? We can even get a couple of the Nurse Dash crew members on here.
Yeah. And I'm glad you brought that up too, Michael, because we did have some responses from the Nerd Stash.
Ooh.
So we have Taylor C. Not me, by the way. Just want to say. Who said, when I brought all this up to the team, I love this question, and it's the kind of thing that I immediately blanked on every game I ever played. Trust me, I've been there.
Is why we couldn't do the 25. Yeah. I blanked out and I was like, oh, I know there's more.
At number 10, Assassin's Creed Odyssey. Number 9, Immortals Phoenix Rising. Number 8, Breath of the Wild. If you're wondering why I'm hesitating here, it's because it was ordered weird because, Discord's weird. So it's actually 10 through 19 that I'm reading that I'm having to put it into a top 10 list. Number 8, Breath of the Wild. Number 7, Fable 3. Number 6, Assassin's Creed 2. Number 5, Unpacking. Number 4, Nintendogs. Number 3, Mario Kart. Number 2, Hitman 3. And number 1, Pokemon Sword and Shield. Really enjoyed this list. It had a huge variety to me. And what I told Taylor was like, Mario Kart is just like a really weird pick because I think a lot of people would put a Mario Kart on their own top 10. But it really just comes down to whichever one you played as a kid with friends or family and destroyed your relationships with them.
Honestly, I'm surprised Nintendogs.
Nintendogs and Unpacking. It seems like some comfy games were in there. Which I respect.
I know, there's some comfy games. Yeah, they're great. Like, I didn't even think about those kind of games. Like, oh, geez, okay.
We also have Julio L, who had number 10, Final Fantasy 14. Number 9, Nioh 2. Number 8, Project Zomboid. Number 7, Batman Arkham City. Number 6, Assassin's Creed Brotherhood. Number 5, Crash Bandicoot 4. Number 4, Persona 5 Royal. Number 3, Tactics Ogre Reborn. Number 2, Final Fantasy Tactics. And number 1, Final Fantasy 12.
Wow. I take it back to the team is no longer allowed to be on the podcast.
Because the Final Fantasy.
Because of Final Fantasy.
No, it's a good list. Our set Final Fantasy being on there, that's exactly what we did with multiple franchises. So I respect that decision. And I told Julio as well, like, I really struggled myself between Arkham City and Arkham Knight. It was really close. I really went with story over the rest. As for why I picked Knight over City. But man, in that Batmobile, it really brought it down. That's where I was like going, yeah, the story's better, but Arkham City's really better overall here. We're talking best quality. So I get why Arkham City was on Julio's list instead of Arkham Knight.
I still haven't played Origins.
Origins is pretty good. It's worth trying out. But that's all we got for today's episode of Power Up and Game. Michael, I want to thank you for joining me for this episode. What are you working on and where can people find you?
I am working on not being lazy and actually starting to stream and whatnot. So I'm still working on that. Other than that, I am working on a video for a couple of games on my TikTok channel. And I am also playing Fortnite. I've been playing the new season of Fortnite. They have Avatar out. I love Avatar The Last Airbender. So I've been trying to get Korra. And I actually, just last night, I unlocked her stuff. And you can find me on Twitter. I'm sorry, on X at @M_MOSLEY_JR. You can also find me on Twitch sooner or later at FoxDaddy. That's FoxDaddy. What about you, Taylor? What are you working on? Where can we find you?
Not working on too much. You can find me in our Discord, the link for which is in the description of this very episode. Again, Michael, I want to thank you for hosting this thing. This was a really fun two-parter. I'm not sure what we're going to be doing next. We are either going to be doing a spoiler talk on the Fallout show, depending on how Michael feels about it and if he gets through the series. I've already seen it. And just to, I guess, spoil my thoughts, absolutely freaking loved it. It was amazing. So hopefully we'll end up doing that if we can find the time. If not, we'll be back talking about some gaming news. But in the meantime, if you need to get any news in the world of gaming, movies, television, and so much more, need to go check out thenerdsesh.com. All right, it's got everything you need. It's got lists, guides, opinion pieces. Be sure to check it out. Site design has been overhauled. It is fantastic. Great writers over there. Great content being made. A lot better than us. All right, that's what I'll say. They make better content than us over there, at least. Again, I want to thank Michael for joining me. I want to thank anyone for listening in. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode.